This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Welcome, illustrious listeners, to the first episode over the 90 mark of Rack Addicts After Hours. You've got Pete and Ben, as always, and there's some super booth wrapping up to do this week. But first, Pete, what have you been up to this week?
Well, apart from purchasing a Endorphins Golden Master just to fill in the last gap on the little live system, I've also been doing some other stuff in respect of the 3D graphics world that you might be interested in.
Ooh, definitely. Far away. What's been happening?
So, I thought I would download and install Unreal Engine 5.
Ah, yeah. Okay, how's that been going?
Not too bad. I wanted to see, not what all the fuss was about, I wanted to see if my machine, I've got a kind of editing, kind of video editing, photo editing machine. It's only got a 1070 graphics card in it.
Decent enough.
It's not too bad. It's got a reasonable amount of memory and so forth. I wanted to see if I could actually run some of the high resolution assets and that type of thing. I've just embarked on doing some of the tutorials that you can find on YouTube, which are very informative. So I'm exploring that product, and it's
lovely.
Not too daunting, but compared to some of the 3D programs I used to use back in the day, it's not too bad. I mean, it's all there, if you know what I mean. It's the various elements can be pulled in relatively easily. I think I'm going to have quite an interesting time with it. I've gone for there's two licenses. They're both initially free. The one that's primarily set up for gaming is no charge until you've made, is it your first million or something like that?
I don't know. I do remember reading them. They were quite fair, I thought, the way they'd set them up.
Then I believe it's 5% they take. The other one, which is sort of aimed at artists and filmmakers, so to speak, is just 100% free all the time.
Oh, I don't remember that, but that's cool.
Yes, so I mean, it's all in beta anyway. It's not the full-blown product as we stand yet. Yeah, so it should be quite interesting. And my approach is, certainly my interest is around the sort of more the film type
video
thing.
Graphics.
Yeah, the video graphics type of thing, to be honest.
Well, let me know how you get on. I've definitely got, I think, about a 5-hour tutorial that's been sitting in my watch later for months because I've never got round to it, apart from installing it and going, ooh, maybe if I could be bothered and had the time. But I definitely should.
Well, I'm just going to do it in nibbles.
Yeah.
Or nibble-sized bites.
I like that, nibble-sized bites. I'm going to steal that. Love it.
So, yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Wonderful. I actually have another entry into the still undefined category of stuff that we like, that's satisfying to hold, and it's maybe potentially nicely crafted and satisfying, and we like it and satisfying. That thing. I have partaken of an American institution, which is a Nalgene water bottle. Have you come across these, Pete?
No, I'm completely unaware of them. Tell me about them.
So, American company, they're just really solid plastic water bottles, and with all the eco stuff these days, they go, oh yes, make sure you've got your single-use bottle. And I've been trying to drink a good amount of water every day, so there was a limited edition one from one of my favourite coffee roasters, the Dark Arts Coffee Company from London, so I thought, why not? But I wasn't expecting it to be so satisfying. So it's a really thick plastic. These are favoured by outdoorsy type people because they're really durable. You can put boiling water in them. They're that plastic that won't leach horrible gubbins into your food and drink and things. I'm struggling with it because it's one of the indefinable things. You want to have a gander at that? There's just something kind of reassuring about it. I don't know why.
It's very substantial.
Yeah, it's completely the opposite of your disposable water that you'd buy in a shop because you forgot.
So what's the whole emphasis behind it?
In what sense? Why did I get it?
Well, not just that. What's their raison d'etre?
Oh, the raison d'etre, of course. It's quite simply, buy one bottle and it will never die kind of idea. I mean, I'm sure if you run it over with a big enough car, it's not going to survive. But the bottle that you could use for anything and will be with you for a very, very, very long time.
It seems to be dedicated to promoting coffee.
That particular one is. I've been thinking about getting one anyway. And then one of my favourite roasters just went, hey, limited edition thing. It's purple and yellow. Why not? They come in nice colours.
So what's that about? A litre or?
It is a litre indeed. The American flavours come in a number of ounces that I don't understand, but that's a litre.
And just purely a water bottle. Is it one of these ones that doesn't leach nasties
exactly.
into the water?
Not that I particularly care about that kind of thing, but apparently that's one of the bits. It's not quite in the category that we so like, because it's not obviously handcrafted, nor is it especially an artisan type thing, but it definitely has that satisfying and reassuring thing about it.
Yes, it's quite a substantial item.
Definitely. I don't see it dying. Another thing about them is, in the bikepacking world, there are sort of oversized bottle cages designed to fit them. And when you're planning on camping and you've only got space for maybe three sort of cycling-sized water bottles, you need more water, and that's going to be a solution, potentially.
Well, that would add a considerable amount of weight. If you certainly mm-hmm. if you had three of those, it'd be 3 litres of water, I can imagine.
It's going to be a lot of weight, certainly. Hopefully I won't have to conquer too many hills. Well, I'm planning on the New Forest for the first expedition. That's relatively flat, so I think I'll be okay.
Is that going to be soon?
Well, I've kind of missed the boat again, because we're in September and approaching the cold, but maybe in the spring.
I suppose you've got to find a good opportunity. Having said it, the weather has been quite gorgeous, you know.
It's been very nice.
That last gasp of summer.
I am kind of waiting for it to get cold. I don't do well in the warm. I know you're a bit of a reptile. You like your solar power.
Well, I don't like it too extreme, and I've been enjoying this weather because it's sort of bright and sunny, but it's relatively temperate.
I can get by with that. But yeah, the deep summer doesn't work for me. Anyway, in my week, there's been a momentous occasion.
Okay, that sounds...
You know it. You know it, Pete. I'm not getting married, don't worry. There is, or there was, a gig. The gig to end all gigs. That I've been waiting for perhaps the past 12 or more years. Not as long as some people, but I have seen the best band of all time. You can come and fight me later if you disagree. Genesis. I saw the first show of their potentially, and looking at Phil, most likely the last tour.
How was it?
It was great. The sound was really great. We were kind of off center from the PA, but the sound was brilliant. Phil's voice is a little weaker in some ways and a certain wobble, but it definitely worked. The timbre was there. Daryl Sturmer's solo from Firth of Fifth was amazing. I'm sorry, Steve Hackett, I don't like the original version that much. Played all the good ones. We had a good sing-along. The family was there. Bucket list. I haven't got anything on the bucket list now. I'm not sure what to do.
And where was the venue?
That was the... Was it Utilita Arena or something? Birmingham. The big Birmingham one.
What, one of the out-of-town things or...
No,
central
one. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that.
No idea. You know, I think we discussed it before, being bought by somebody and it probably had a better name in the past. One of those.
So you say they played everything you expected, or did they play everything that you'd wanted to hear?
Yeah. I think most of the slightly left-field ones that I would have wanted to hear are actually from, and then there were three, like your Snowbounds and... Actually, Snowbound, I love that one. They did slip in Dancing with the Moonlit Night, which was very much unexpected, because I've never heard Phil do that intro before.
And what album was that off?
That is, damn, Selling England. Is it Selling England?
Selling England by the Pound.
Mm.
Well, then there were threes, 1977.
You're good with your Genesis dates, I remember this.
Well, it was my youth. Mm. Oh, I say that, I just left school and was embarking on an apprenticeship.
Nice. It's good how you connect songs with the key life events. Kind of thing.
I think it was the first time that Genesis actually charted in the UK.
Selling England?
Well, no, the Follow You, Follow Me.
Oh, and then there were three. Yeah. Yeah, so Dancing with the Moonlit Night, yes, that is Selling England by the Pound. They had a little sort of stripped back, slightly acoustic-y number in the middle with That's All, which was a slightly strange choice, but welcome nonetheless. I've not heard that one live, really.
Did they do any other Peter Gabriel era
we
songs?
We had... Is Carpet Crawlers a Gabriel one?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. So they had Carpet Crawlers. Yum,
yum, yum, that's yum, from yum. The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there was... I Know What I Like and Firth of Fifth technically count, but Firth of Fifth... See, they only do the instrumental stuff. A smattering. Then they had the big ones like Domino. It's amazing, obviously, firmly in the Phil era.
And Carpet Crawlers was very, although it was, I wouldn't say a duet as such, but there's a lot of Mr. Collins in that, in the original.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sort of towards the height of his backing singer type stuff.
Yeah.
When he's really getting into
before
that.
Before he stepped out from the drum kit.
Yeah. There was another bit that was good, apart from the whole thing. Yes, Fading Lights. That was huge. Massive bit. What I do want to talk to you about is Tony Banks and his keyboard rig. Do you know why I want to talk to you about Tony Banks and his keyboard rig?
Because we sold it to him?
Because there were two keyboards there that your own Pete sold the man himself. So yes, two Roland big 88 key controllers. I can't remember what they call them.
It's the, I can't think of the model.
A88?
Yeah, that's Mark II, that rings Mark about, yeah, I think it is the Roland A88, and it's the one with MIDI 2.0
that's the
capabilities,
chat.
And it has a PHA4 keybed. Mm. In it, which is the same one as the FP30.
Bad memories.
And quite a few other keyboards.
But yeah, so we had his two of those. One of them was just for that stripped back thing. It was just on another location in the stage. So what was quite interesting was, if you think about a classic top-down keyboard rig Tony Banks shot, you know, your classic surrounded by keyboards and plenty of them, this was very simple. It was one of those Roland controllers. He then had a Korg 01/W, which is a workstation-y Rompler thing from 91. Obviously just has some of the best sounds on it, and he just uses them. The faithful Korg Oasis and Mainstage. That was it.
And that was it?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you don't want to be befuddled with layers and layers of keyboards, do you? Just want to crack on.
But as far as they go, that's a relatively affordable rig. I mean, the Oasis, not so much.
Was he predominantly using the A88 at all?
A88 loads, that Korg workstation a bit, and the Oasis for like two sounds.
Yeah, it was most probably a year ago when he actually came in with his entourage to check it out.
Yeah.
We were given forewarning of his arrival.
Yep, I was teased by the boss for quite a few days that I wasn't there when Tony came in.
Very personal gentleman.
Yeah.
Very unassuming. It's really hard to tell. Everyone was wearing masks.
Yeah. Could have been anyone, really. But yeah, no, it was cool. I saw those keyboards and I thought, yeah, Pete sold them those. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough of my Genesis storying, because I could go on for 1,000,000,000 years. Let's turn our attention to the Boopersooths. Of course, you know I mean Superbooth, wrapped up now. And we could bore you with a million headlines of all the every single thing that was released and announced and talked about and discussed and all that, but you can go and find those on YouTube if you want. We're going to go through and we're going to talk about the bits that actually we found interestimonio. Because there's a few that have actually grabbed us a bit. Let's leave the one that starts with a T to the end, because I think we've got mostly stuff to talk about. But what do you reckon's your highlight?
Well, I would imagine it would be the one that we're going to leave to the end.
Cool.
To be honest. But there were some others that caught my eye. I mean, there was a lot of stuff covered, or certainly what we were able to see, and most probably a lot more that we weren't able to see. But there was a number of things that I thought, no, that is actually quite interesting. I mean, there was one here that initially didn't grab me until the gentleman demonstrated how it all worked. And it was the modules from the man with the machine, or as it is in German,
yes.
Der Mann mit der Maschine.
I did watch that video. I'd come across them on Modular Grid ages ago and thought, But yeah, that was a cool video.
So that was the Banks of the Flying Faders.
Yeah, that I think that was the new product for the ecosystem from the show. So the rest of it's been around for a little bit now.
Yeah, and he was using those in combination and using the program. And I kind of thought, well, why would you need motorized faders in a Eurorack system? But once he actually demonstrated the capability in coordination with the other modules that they do, I thought, actually...
Now you need them.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting setup, especially for live. Yeah, so once I'd actually saw them in action with the other modules, I actually thought, no, they're actually quite good. And I'm going to investigate. I did have a quick gander on the website, but it was because the gentleman is mainly focused on his own live performances.
Right.
I wasn't able to find the products, but I didn't do a great deal of research. I just sort of linked to the website and had a mooch around. But I shall investigate further, and hopefully they're not going to be, one, astronomically priced, and two, they're going to be available.
Oh, yeah, that's always the fun one.
Because the overarching thing that I took away from it, without exception, there was a good proportion of the people that held up their hands and talked about the semiconductor shortage and how it's affecting them. So when they were asked about price and availability, they always prefaced it with, yes, when we can get the components. So I think that's going to be...
It's getting everywhere, isn't it?
Yes. I think that's going to be a bit of a plague upon our houses.
We'll have
quite
to
literally.
Find out. Yeah.
I think it's going to be... It's going to exasperate the situation. It's always frustrating anyway that you get these announcements and then these items don't sort of appear or don't appear for some time. But I think the semiconductor shortage is just going to extend that, or it's going to really limit the availability in the respective quantities of products.
Mm, definitely. It's a shame. If you haven't seen this video, listeners, do go find it. It's a Sonic State one, Der Man mit der Maschine. There's a demo of, I think, 2 or maybe more of the flying fader modules. I think it's 4 in a module.
Yeah, I mean, he had 8 in total, yeah, didn't he?
And a couple of the button modules. So he had set it up to be sort of an 8-step, or even he could have done a 16-step, I can't remember, but a sequencer. So using the faders, as you would imagine, on a sequencer, and using the buttons to go between a few automation layers, pitch layers, gate layers, and all this kind of stuff. And it's such a small feature, having flying faders, but it adds so much ease of use to the, I don't want to say UI, but I guess it is a UI, because it's buttons and faders, but flipping between those layers and just immediately being able to recognize where anything is. What was really cool was the bit when he showed the notches in the faders. Did you see that bit?
Yes.
That was so cool. So somehow using the motors to provide haptic feedback. So if you've got it in a note mode, for example, you'll feel the little notch as you move to the next note. So cool. Love it.
It'd be interesting to understand how robust they are.
Yeah, and I'd also like to know how you program your different uses of stuff, because if it's too coding-y and pure data-y and above my pay grade, that limits my interest.
I didn't get that impression. It just seemed to be, I mean, I got the impression he was doing some of it on the fly, but,
oh, okay.
But maybe I misunderstood. It just seemed so easy at the time while he was demonstrating.
Definitely a cool one, definitely. I think my highlight is going to have to be Dreadbox Nymphus, which I think it's called Nymphus, after my confusion on the previous episode. I mean, we've said all there is to be said about it, really, but, you know, small, portable, well-priced, 6-voice, analog, kind of interesting and weird, but it's Dreadbox. So we're going to love it.
And very Juno-esque sounding as well.
Mm-hmm. It's got a bit of that flavour.
And quite a reasonable price.
Definitely. If I go polysynth, I know where I'll go.
Yeah, I could see you with one of those.
I like the colours. Pretty colours. It's cool. Yes.
What about, was there anything else that caught your eye particularly?
No.
I think a lot of the things that were demonstrated, we'd been waiting quite some time for, and they were just things that had been in sort of beta or things that had been in sort of pre-manufacturing states.
Yeah, and a few things like that would be kind of bigger announcements, like the UDO module. It's just the Super 6, but it's a module, so it's actually not that exciting. And neither of us really care about that Waldorf wavetable thing.
Not at all. I was very, very unstirred by it. Didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I know Graham from the ModCaf is very excited because he has a nostalgic vibe with that because of the kind of music that the original made, I think. So he's excited. But
did they state a price?
I wasn't interested enough to look for one. No, I'm sorry,
imagine,
Waldorf.
I can't imagine it's going to be very cheap.
No. Well, it was that we spoke about it, the Kyra form factor, which as a form factor is probably a bit pricey just because that really nice metal case and all the screen and bits and pieces.
Yeah, certainly. There was the SoundForce Juno 60 oscillators.
Yeah, I did scroll past those. I mean, the thing is with those, yeah, I would just want a Juno. I don't want a mono voice in Eurorack. That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh, so what about the Egan Matrix module?
Not exciting for me, but certainly it will have its fans because that's a cool synth engine that you've got in there. And I think it's got poly stuff because I'm pretty sure there was a MIDI.
Yeah, I'm sure he said it was 8 voice.
That would make sense. I've never used it or necessarily really heard it, so I don't know how much I really like it.
Yeah, not for modular.
Nah. I know Ant from the ModCaf is tempted by some of these modular poly options like the PolyFX Hector.
The Egan Matrix stuff. Yeah, not for...
Nope, not for me either.
Right, what else? I mean, there was the firmware update for the 1010 Music Box. Interesting if you've got one of those or you're planning to get one. Which I sort of am, but not necessarily a revelation.
No, nothing knocking my socks off, apart from one thing.
Okay, and that was?
Ooh, it might be Tip Top Audio. Yes. Tip Top Audio, Gurr Milstein or Milstein, I never remember, and the genuine Buchlery people, and possibly Don himself, giving him permission or giving a general permission before he passed away. Tip Top Audio, official Buchler modules. Now that has actually grabbed mine attenzione. I did a bit of price grabbing before we began, because they've got some of the classics coming out. So they've got a few that they've lined up to do first, and they're does seem to be plans to make a complete range available eventually, but we're going for the Joule oscillator, quad function generator, quad low pass gate, Joule voltage processor, source of uncertainty, and sequential voltage source. All potentially, well, the highest price we've got listed here is $210, which is not many monies. So assuming $210, let's compare the price of the quad low pass gate in the new Tip Top Audio Euro format with the real deal. I believe KMR Audio in the UK is the only place you can really get them from here. £1,299, hooray! And that's without the case and the other sundries. Owie.
So what's that? That's a 600% difference.
Yep. And so, officially sanctioned, made by Tip Top Audio, why would you ever want Buchla? I mean, why would you ever want Buchla anyway? Because of the ridiculous price.
Is that the cachet of owning a Buchla?
Probably. Either way, in terms of sound, because I'm a big fan of Suzanne Ciani. Tempting, tempting, tempting.
I can see myself getting this.
Especially if they're kind of released slowly. It's like, oh no, there's not going to be another one out for 2 months. I've got a while to save up. And that's listener David. I've called you out again. That case that you've got. I believe he's got a Mantis. That I've said, payday's coming up soon, and the tax man was nice to me. Yeah, gears are turning.
Sits well in that case, doesn't it?
Yes, I think his has green legs, but I don't mind.
Does it make any difference?
No.
The trouble is, when you say that you sort of get a module, then get another one, you've got to have all these modules. Well, not all of them, but you've got to have a selection for them to work, because they're not going to work with anything else.
Ah, they're doing the original voltage ranges, aren't they? It'll be fine, just get an offset and you're okay.
So you think you could get them to talk to other Eurorack without too much of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I believe instead of being plus and minus 5, which tends to be a Euro LFO kind of standard, I think they're 0 to 10. And yeah, if you just get an offset, you'll be fine.
So it sits in the middle.
I think so. I think we need to pick Akira's brains on that because they sent a message expressing interest as well. And with the kind of make noise and sort of Buchla-ish similarities, I think there's some knowledge to be gained from picking Akira's brains. I'll do that at the next ModCaf. Ooh, look at that. That will be with Pete in October soon. And that little rig is going to happen. But back to Buchla. There's little things that just make it quite interesting for me, the whole Buchla vibe. One such thing being that the sequential voltage source is 5 steps. Not 4 or 8, it's 5, which is just kind of strange, and I love it. Like the RYO Penta sequences I used to like quite a lot. And the labelling just is a little bit odd, slightly strange. Like the clock on the voltage source is called the pulser. At least I assume that's the clock. Internal time, is that tempo? I don't know. Does it have a slew limiter in it? Maybe. It's just intriguing. It has that aesthetic. Ooh, it's...
Yes.
Do you have any experience with anything Buchla-flavoured? Because all I have is listening to Suzanne Ciani and liking it.
No, I have no experience whatsoever other than people demonstrating their Buchla easels, or maybe if they're lucky, it's the 200E, I want to say, or is it the E200?
200E, yeah, 200E. That's the big one of the big boys.
Yeah, way back, I mean, I got into Eurorack about 8 years ago, and prior to that, I had been looking at a bit of 5U stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like sort of the .com and
synthesizer.com, etc., Moon Modular, and I had been looking at Dofer, and I had looked at Buchla, because obviously when you start investigating, there was a lot less modular around at that time, although it was about, and it was just the price. I think the 200E was $20,000.
Ouch.
And that was back then.
Yeah.
So who knows how much it is now. And I just thought, ouch.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the specification of the system, so I don't know what's in a 200E, but available now-ish, the sort of flagship would be the Skylab, which is £14,789 from KMR Audio. And that's a two-row, what's that going to be, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-ish module per row. It's not many modules in a system.
Absolute bargain.
And then you'll have to shell out loads for bananas as well. Love it.
Yeah, I'm very interested. I mean, you can use your stackables.
Yep, I've still got my stackables. That's the last thing to sell that I haven't.
The only thing that you did dispose of.
The only thing.
Tip Top Audio stackable.
Well,
cables.
Actually, my general patch cable collection still exists. Maybe a tin of Nerlies. I'm not entirely sure. Anyway.
So
yeah.
I can see myself getting a dedicated case for these.
Yeah,
I've no idea how you're so... I mean, do you get one of each, or do you do you have more than one of certain modules?
You've probably got to start with one of each, definitely.
I note the oscillator was a dual oscillator, so that's that out the way straight away.
Now, well, that's the standard thing, isn't it? Your complex oscillator kind of situation.
And then you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, quad function generator. It's pretty cool. That's another thing. On this one, you've got your four rows. You've got a trigger input with a button, straightforward. A cycle input and a toggle switch. So I guess you can gate on and off the cycle. That's cool. CV in for the attack and decay. You've got an attack and decay. Love it. You've got two outputs, one of which might be a positive one. The other one has an upside down T on it. I don't know what that means. Or is that an input? Is that an inverted output? Who knows? And then there's a section on the right that has all sorts of squiggly somethings and it says quadrature on it. And I like quad things. I'm intrigued by it all. Exciting.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the overarching thing I've got with it, it wasn't Behringer that did it, which I'm really glad about.
Yeah, Tip Top got there first. Yay.
And it's officially sanctioned.
Yeah.
And you know with Tip Top, it's good quality stuff.
Definitely. Now, so, we trust Tip Top. I trust Gurr.
Yeah, I am quite enthused.
Definitely.
And it's affordable.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully available from a music shop near you.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long we're going to have to wait for this, though. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. Well, they say winter. How long before that slips to...
Winter.
Spring. I think it says winter 2020-21, but yeah.
Oh, right. It's going to be 2022, certainly in Europe. It's got to be, isn't it?
Yeah,
we haven't got much winter left.
Yeah, the source of uncertainty is spring or summer 2022.
Yeah, I think I'll hold off until later next year when there's hopefully reasonable supplies, unless this semiconductor shortage really continues and things get real bad.
Yeah, depending on how I feel, I might make sure there's a case ready when these are available. That's the feeling at the moment, but my mind might change in the next 5 seconds, as is it is wont to do. There we are. That's the super booth finished. For now, because we might notice something else as other news places get their backlogs out the way, but we'll see.
No, there was, you know, standard stuff, a lot of things that we've already discussed in previous podcasts. Nothing really that I got tremendously excited about. A lot of things that have been shown before, and they're just a bit further towards getting them into production. Maybe some of them are ready for production, but... Yes, it was only a couple of handful of things that really caught my eye. Did anyone have a heads up on the Tip Top stroke Buchla announcement? It was a very sudden.
Yeah, I didn't see anything. No teasers,
nothing at
all. Obscure bits. Suddenly it's there.
Yes.
Love it. Good surprise. Now, must be time to round off episode 91. As always, we end with the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Mine's YouTube again. I'm sorry, I'm trying to cut down, I swear. This one is a channel named strangely. It's called Mustard, and it is nothing to do with a not very nice condiment. I don't like mustard. Anyway, this is a channel devoted to 10-ish minute documentary things centering around sort of aviation-y, transport-y, project-y boats things. For example, we've got What Happened to Giant Ekranoplans? And What Happened to the Antarctic Snow Cruiser? What else have we got? The Problem with Fast Trains. What Happened to the Jet-Powered Monorails? So it's that kind of thing. But what I really like about these, they're all kind of historical ones, but they all have really nice 3D models of what the guy's talking about, and it's really nicely illustrated. Most of these... there's little, if any, historical archive-type footage of, for example, Americans' attempt at doing a Concorde. Well, of course there's not going to be any archive footage of, because they never built it. Spoilers, sorry. But, yeah, really nice 3D models. And it's just interesting about this kind of aviation history, or it's mostly aviation history, let's be honest. I'm not a massive plane nerd, but these little documentaries are really, really appealing. So... Mustard on YouTube. If you want to know why the Blackbird was nearly invulnerable, the SR-71 Blackbird, that is. Mustard on YouTube. Pete, what have you got for us to bring us to the end this week?
Right, this one is a YouTube channel. You may actually be familiar with this one after your comment about having a 5-hour tutorial for Unreal.
I don't actually know what channel it is. I'm going to have to hunt for it now.
So... this is a YouTube channel called Unreal Sensei, and it's the gentleman who has posted, not many, but they look quite concise, and one of them is virtually 5 hours long, but he is...
Yes.
Yeah, it is that one. Yeah. So he's shown a number of tutorials for Unreal Engine 5, and they're the tutorials I'm currently working through. So actually there's a couple here that are both nearly 5 hours long. So they're quite in-depth, to put it lightly. And there's some other shorter ones, but most of them are very comprehensive from ground up. And they has a scene or something that he's put together, and then he goes about showing you exactly how you can build it for yourself. And within that process, you should be able to learn a good overview of how the program works. So that would be my recommendation for this week. Unreal Sensei.
Lovely stuff. And I do hope for an update on your Unreal progress. Hopefully that will stir me up into action to actually, you know, get going. Because I was scrolling for quite a while because it's buried under about 30 other Blender tutorials that I have to get through at some point. I swear I will. Thank you, audience, as always, for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. Please tune in next week, and of course, find us on social media at Rack Addicts UK. Please let us know you're out there. We know you are. We can see your listens. But farewell. Bye now.